And good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Pharmacy Interoperability and Emerging Therapeutics Task Force. I'm Mike Berry with ONC, and we're glad that you could be with us today. This task force meeting is open to the public, and your comments are welcome in Zoom chat throughout the meeting or during the public comment period that will be held around 11:50 Eastern Time this morning. I'd like to begin roll call of our task force members, so when I call your name, please let us know if you are here. And I'll begin with our co-chairs, Hans Botendijk.
Good morning.
Sally Spiro.
Good morning.
Pooja Babra.
Good morning, I'm here.
Chris Blackley is not able to join us. Shai LeBlend.
Good morning.
David Butler.
Good morning.
Steve Eichner.
Present.
Raj Gabarty.
Good morning.
Audie Grimopoli is not joining us today. Jim Jurgis.
I'm present and suggest changing my asterisk to two asterisks.
Okay. Yeah, for those of you that haven't heard that Jim has accepted and started a new position at the CDC, and he's actually going to be the CDC's federal representative on the HITAC, replacing Audie. So congratulations, Jim. So we'll add your extra asterisk. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh. And Summer Kahlon. Stephen Lane.
Good morning. I'm here. And special congratulations to Jim on your asterisk.
Meg Marshall. Anne McAllister, I believe, is not able to join us today. Devin McGraw.
Present. Good morning, everyone.
Ethan Mehta.
Good morning.
Justin Neal.
Good morning, everyone.
Elia Oliveira.
Good morning.
Narish Thunderbrajan. Scott Robertson. Alexis Snyder is not able to join us today.
I'm sorry, Bill this Sutherland. Is Scott Robertson. I missed.
Oh, great. Thank you, Scott. And Bill Sutherland. Christian Tadris. Gerald Turney. And Afton Wagner.
Good morning.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much. And now please join me in welcoming Hans and Shelley for their opening remarks.
Good morning, everybody. Really appreciate everybody joining. We are keep on going. We are going to start with topic four today in a moment, as Shelley and Tricia Lee provide further introductions. And after the topic four, we're going to go back and keep on moving anything into the green as far as we can go today. So that we'll look at what we have done and what we still need to do at that point in time. And as always, at the end, public comment, which also means that along the way, for those who are from the public, please use chat if you want to make comments, ask questions along the way. And then at the end, you have the opportunity to either emphasize or provide additional comments at that point in time verbally. So looking forward to that and all the task force members to use everyone in the chat to get it on the record as well. So with that, I'm going to pass it to Shelley.
Thank you, Hans, and welcome everyone to our weekly meeting. We are so glad that we were able to meet. Luckily, the ONC is available to be with us today, and the government didn't close this last weekend. So we're very thankful that we can continue our work. I would like to, our next topic is on the direct-to-consumer prescription services. We have not been able to secure a speaker or presenter for this section. So I asked Tricia Lee if she'd be willing to explain ONC's reason that this particular topic was added to the discussion. So I'm going to turn it over to Tricia Lee to provide some insight into that.
Thanks, Shelley, and congratulations to Jim. Welcome to civil service. So we've reached our fourth topic. It's kind of hard to believe we've been at it for a while, but here we are. And we've described this as direct-to-consumer prescription or prescribing services. And it's really an area of healthcare services that provide prescription medications based on an online assessment. That could be a questionnaire or some form that gets filled out, possibly calls and or video meetings with a physician or a nurse practitioner. A lot of the prescribing for this area has been around acute infections, sexual reproductive health issues, and medications can be delivered to your home or a prescription can be sent to your pharmacy. So payment can also range. It can be self-pay. You can use an HSA or maybe even a Flex savings account. And there are some insurances that these companies are accepting as well. There are a number of these types of companies out there. We were advised that we probably don't want to specifically call them out. But I mean, if you try to Google kind of my description, you could probably find some of these. And so this is an area that ONC is interested in hearing your recommendations just because it's emerging, it's new. And while there are reasons why patients might want to circumvent or not use traditional channels to seek medical care and get prescriptions, we're just interested in the connectivity of it all. Are the recommendations that the task force has for ONC on the area as far as standards, technology, or anything else that we might do to be supportive or areas we need to look out and watch out for. So I know that certainly, there are a lot of privacy concerns, why a patient or individual might not want their primary care physician to know that they're receiving a certain treatment or have a certain condition. I don't think we want the task force to delve too deeply into that, but to really kind of focus on, again, are there any technical considerations or things that ONC should keep front of mind, top of line, when we're thinking about this area? So I hope that helps describe what we mean when we say direct-to-consumer prescription services.
Thank you, Tricia Lee. That was a great overview of what we're trying to have. And so we'll continue the discussion on this until the top of the hour. So let's open it up for a discussion on what folks feel about this topic. Pretty quiet out there.
Shelley, I'll also add that these services can be accessed online. You can go to websites, but you can also download apps that allow you to do this as well.
So what do folks feel about this? Okay, Pooja, thank you for stepping up.
Yeah, so I guess when I think about online pharmacies, there's a couple of things that come to mind in terms of recommendations. One is, and I know earlier this year, NCPDP held a stakeholder action group that talked about digital therapeutics. And I know that was a topic, I think, last week, if I remember right. And what we heard in that discussion was, a lot of these digital therapeutics were using these online pharmacies and they were faxing prescriptions, right? Or not using standards in order to get the prescriptions, which to me, I think that's one thing that we need to be thinking about in terms of, is there an opportunity for us to think about like what kind of standards could be used to get prescriptions to these pharmacies? And I'm not saying that they have to use, with apps and things, there's probably lighter weight standards, but, APIs, things like that. So I guess in my head, when I'm thinking about recommendations we could make, it's about how do we make sure that prescriptions that are being sent to the online pharmacies are being, using standards, but then also, from bringing it kind of into the data fold, right? Like, how are you capturing that into med history? If someone's using an app to order it, is that being captured in the patient's medication history? We've been talking a lot about, can pharmacists have access to, the patient's clinical information, medication information when they're going to provide clinical services. So how do we make sure that those pharmacies are looped in just like any other pharmacy if they're dispensing medications. I guess that's kind of initial reaction when I think about these types of pharmacies.
Thank you, Pooja. David.
Just to give you this is clearly a personal opinion on this, but my impression is that this is not an area that needs a technology solution as far as is there too much or too little of this. This should be handled more from the patient care regulatory side, rather than saying this technology should not be used for this or that. So it sounds to me like we're kind of opening our discussions here. So I'm taking the direction of if the patient is benefiting from care, wherever it comes from in the world, the technology becomes irrelevant with regard to controlling that. It may benefit, so we shouldn't restrict it. If it's a deficiency, then the deficiency should be focused on how is the patient being harmed. So I don't see this as a technology-based discussion. I think it's more practice and care.
Well, thank you, Stephen.
And I'll once again echo David, as I tend to do in these meetings, simply say I think that we want to hold these direct consumer prescription services to the same standards that we would hold any other provider, that we should make sure that these systems, programs, vendors, are able to access the necessary clinical data to inform the care and services that they provide, and that those care and services, are documented in a way that are then made available to everyone else on the care team with a valid need to know. The fact that they are direct consumer, notwithstanding, the rest of us on the care team need to know the services have been, provided the dispense history, all the same information as if they were going through a retail pharmacy or a clinic.
Thank you, Stephen. Cheryl.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, because it looks like I'm muted on my computer. I've got a new Windows system and I don't know how to use everything yet. Okay, thank you very much for that. I wanted to agree with some of the things that Stephen just brought up, but also I think it's important because, from a clinical and a payer perspective, medication reconciliation, being aware of all of the prescriptions and the adherence that a patient has is very important. And today we don't have access really to those things that are direct to consumer because they often don't go through insurance for various reasons. So I think it's really important that the adherence is the same standards that we have, regardless of, the payment method or how that prescription service is provided, but that clinical information, the medication reconciliation, all of those abilities to share that data across the spectrum is going to be very important.
Thank you. Scott.
Yes. In regard to the idea of, they need to have access to, pertinent information, and they should be providing that information back into the broader patient record. I think their basic model has a disincentive to participate, because if they're marketing, here's healthcare services you can get, nobody's going to know about it. There's, if they follow standard of practice and provide that information back to the longitudinal health record, they're actually exposing what they've that service, and so the primary care providers will see it anyway. So I'm not quite sure. I think that's just sort of a fundamental problem. I don't know that that there's really any recommendation around that, but just wanted to bring that out.
Thank you. I'd like to ask Christian if you can explain your comment, because I know, Christian, you're a member of the Missouri State Board of Pharmacy. From a State Board of Pharmacy standpoint, can you opine on that?
Yeah, I think I was just calling out, and then I do apologize. I joined after the question was asked, and I've been inferring what you were asking about. But so if I'm a little off topic, I apologize to everybody. The topic being, you know, the informed standards, and Kathy brought up the point around boards of pharmacies being possible, you know, involved in that conversation. And I would say that if we're going down this path, we do have to recognize the states have the ultimate authority on prescriptive authority, how the practice is deployed in their state. And so we have to recognize that and be accommodative in whatever map we lay out to and defer to a large degree around those allowances. So whereas my comment really was that it's not just the pharmacy state laws and or regulations that fall from those that might be kind of the lens at which that state board of pharmacy expects care to happen or dispensing of medications to happen from the standpoint of patient safety. There are also other laws and regulations that often appear on books that really are at the prescriptive end of the equation, at the prescriber's side, such as non-steerage expectations, you know, freedom of choice of pharmacy, those concepts, but also this idea of what a valid patient relationship might have to constitute in order for the issuance for a script to be considered valid, even if issued. And in Missouri, we have some regs on the book around that as well. And so that makes it incredibly hard for pharmacists to determine, you know, whether or not the prescription being issued had met the thresholds for being considered a legal prescription for purposes of dispensing. So, you know, there's some pros and cons to that, because I think we could help with communication around some of these issues and definitions and the types of prescriptions and the types of consultations that were that these prescriptions emanate from, that would give some clarity to that, so that pharmacies aren't inadvertently filling scripts or scripts aren't being issued inappropriately under state laws, especially when they go across state borders for residents of different states. But, you know, we've done some work with that at NCPDP, codification in the script standard around the type of, you know, whether it's subsequent to a telehealth visit, a modifier, or whether, you know, it was an inpatient location scenario. So I think those can be informative in our standards. With regard to the mail order, I would argue and probably support the concept of the model doesn't seem to replicate where this is heading at the moment, and is probably influenced largely by things outside of the professional care relationships. So, yeah, it's a tough question to answer. From a regulatory standpoint, though, just to close out, you know, as a regulator, we would license a dispensing pharmacy as a dispensing pharmacy. We would hold them to whatever accountable expectations we have of a pharmacy. And so they aren't different in that respect. They may have some slight variations of allowances based on method of delivery and contact with the patient. But, you know, we would hold a mail order accountable just like we would a community or a long-term care to whatever our regs were if they're operating in our state. So keep that in mind. I think it's just, I would say that there is a regulatory conversation we have to talk about, probably more even a state statutory conversation if we're going to do this. But standards can help if they can follow and keep up with those changes, which I think the standards organizations do a good job at trying to accommodate.
So Christian, just a follow-up question. How do the state boards of pharmacies, do the prescribers have to get a license in order to do this online prescribing? And I assume that it goes to a mail order pharmacy, so that also needs to have a license. Is that correct?
So a mail order pharmacy would have to have a license issued from the state at which they are, for example, shipping prescriptions into, and would have to comply with all the requirements of that license category that they get for that state. So it'll vary by, you know, those requirements will vary across the 50 states from their prescribing and the validity of an issued prescription. That's going to vary also by states based on most of it on the Medical Practice Act definitions that apply to the prescribing side of the equation, physicians, nurse practitioners, and so forth. And some of them are fairly specific about what threshold must be met to constitute a valid patient-care relationship and therefore a prescription being issued. Now the routing of that, those scripts are a little, you know, are really more of an EHR function and, you know, payer incentivized directional flow, as well as patient choice where appropriate and you know, for their, you know, the pocketbook, I guess. But the so I think there are different components there, Shelley. Does that answer the question or?
Just one more follow-up. Are any of those prescribers required to use e-prescribing as the states have, as some of the states have adopted mandatory e-prescribing? Most of them have.
Yeah, I think we're in that weird transition phase of 5 to 10 years where as those mandates are coming on board for either reasons of patient safety or monitoring controlled substance flow, all the states that I'm aware of have quite a few exceptions that allow them to use paper, fax, you know, just all kinds of things that say, look, if they don't have the technology in place, or, you know, they can ask for an exemption or they could qualify those things. So I think we're still dealing with a lot of that, even though the states are moving rapidly towards some directional flow in the prescribing standpoint of mandatoriness. I think, you know, any prescribing switch would be able to give you a little more detail on how much of the adoption is there. But even in Missouri, for example, and this is something we've dealt with on our state board, is the fact that many of our physicians still don't have electronic systems. You know, there are country docs, there are people that are working in small hospitals that can't afford systems. Surprisingly, there are a few community pharmacies that still do things without e-prescribing. And when you're in a model at which you're maybe a cash-based pharmacy, which is increasingly popular nowadays, you know, other than e-prescribing, you know, you're probably not buying a system to do telecom processing of payment with third-party insurances. So, you know, the models are evolving still. It's still a little wild west out there, I suppose. But, you know, from a regulatory standpoint and a legislative standpoint, I think it's still it's not 100% mandatory, I think, is the problem.
Thanks, Christian. Pooja?
Yeah, I think Christian brings up some really good points. I never really thought about kind of how individual states, and I think, you know, when I think of these online pharmacies, I wonder, I don't know if like Amazon Pharmacy would count under this umbrella, right? And I just don't, I wonder, and I'm looking at, you know, kind of Hans's recommendation of do we just consider these as, you know, kind of the same types of, you know, facilities, right, that should be under any of these rules. But then when I think about just all the models, the such a new space, I wonder if it's just too early to even make recommendations in this area. I don't know. I think Christian brought up some really good points, and I think we need to take those into consideration in terms of state regulations and what's considered, right, of actual pharmacy.
Scott.
Yes, and following up on Christian and Todd and Pooja and others, these are providers. They need to abide by all state and or federal regulations, and as such they should be sharing information unless the patient actively states they do not want it to be shared, because the patients have that choice. Again, reiterating, it seems that would be mainly a state level concern rather than federal, but whatever ONC or the federal agencies could say in terms of those services abiding by all the rules for non-direct consumer providers. I don't know if that can be a recommendation. Thank you.
Hans? Hans?
Sorry, I was double muted. So I think is that what it sounds like is that from a recommendations to ONC perspective, that we can treat this as another setting, another context, but with that effectively based on state, other jurisdictional rules have to play by the same rules. But from an ONC perspective, I've not heard that there is a different kind of interoperability, a different kind of data set, a different something else that we need to highlight with a specific recommendation, but rather that as things are being rolled out, and I'm going a little bit to a comment that Katie Russell is making as well around consent, whether it's opt-in, opt-out, whether it's explicit at that point in time, but it needs to be in a statement then by the patient that, yes, I'm consenting to share, to have you share, or I'm not. However that's done, it needs to be transparent to the patient. But I'm not seeing anything unique to ONC that we can recommend that needs to be addressed differently or additionally. And that's what I was trying to make with the comment in the chat, that we need to acknowledge that is a space, that they in many ways are interacting or have a need to potentially interact in the same way, depending on to what level the patient wants to have the data shared or not.
Thanks, Hans. So I assume, and I have not seen, and maybe Tricia Lee, you can answer this. Has ONC recognized this setting as following the rules of ONC, especially from the prescriber standpoint?
I would say that the closest, or at least the catch-all umbrella here would be, call it telehealth from an HHS perspective. But I think that there are some unique aspects to the services that we're trying to describe here. So this forum right here is probably the most direct that we've come at identifying this category of services, that you just download an app and run with it, or go on the website and you know, input your symptoms and see what happens. I hope that's helpful. So, I mean, generally we are working in telehealth space, but this high-tech topic is our first real venture into understanding or exploring specifically that workflow. Patient gets an app or goes online, puts in their symptoms. Maybe they talk to a nurse practitioner or a physician who then sends or ships a prescription. There are other areas where potentially the service might request a lab or send off something to collect a sample that goes back to. So depending again on what type of health concern there is, it can be a little bit more involved. But the questionnaire or video chat with a nurse practitioner or physician is pretty typical as far as, you know, the patient identifying their symptoms without a face-to-face visit and that prescription being delivered to them.
So it does fall under telehealth, is what you're saying.
I would say that could be a catch-all for it. I would say that could be a catch-all for it.
Okay. Any other comments, questions? Thank you all for a great discussion. I think we got the gist of what we needed. Hans, I hope we have. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Hans to lead our discussion on topic 1, 2, and 3. For the review of the recommendations.
All right, sounds great. And just one comment, as today our patient advocates reps Anna and Alexis are not on, we probably may want to carve out some time next week as we talk about recommendations. Hopefully see how far we get to topic 4 that we can ensure that there is nothing else that we need to add to this. All right, so I think what we're going to do then is go to the spreadsheet, and if it's okay, I think It might be easiest if I'm going to share my screen. Last time we were a little bit challenged with a couple of editors in the same cell at the same time. So what we're trying to do today is that I'm going to be editing in E, column E for topic one and column F for topic two, if we get there. But I would be the only one. So I would ask that everybody stays out of column E or column F in the respective topic. If you have any thoughts or suggestions to make that you wanted to quickly write down and a suggestion or alternative, if you can find an empty column on the right of it, and then as needed, then we can already at this time copy and paste over or at a later point in time. But please stay out of column E, including if you, even if you sit on top of it, that might already cause a challenge. So I would suggest not to point at any cell, particularly in that regard, if you can. I'm going to start sharing my screen. And if it is correct, then you should see that right now. And the first question then always is that, is this large enough? Or is it too large? That could happen too.
Too small.
Small still. Okay, I'm going to go and increase it a little bit. Let me know when the text is large enough, and then I'll adjust the column sizes accordingly. Is this good enough?
It's better, but I think once you open up the actual, you know, you double click on the cell that you're interested in, we'll be able to see it better.
Okay, so we'll go with this. Let me know initially that that we have it right, and let's start. So what has happened since last week is that a couple things. On the left-hand side in column D, you will see a slightly expanded reference when it says covered in topic one. And then it would be E2. And since there are multiple recommendations, it's the recommendation listed as well. So as you go through your comments in column D and see, is it addressed? Is it not addressed? It is fully now indexed in column D in for topic one. I'm almost done with topic two to get to the bottom of that list. That's two or three left to get that, make sure that they are at that level of detail. So that allows you to say that, okay, I made my comment, and to double check whether we addressed it sufficiently or not, we believe it has been addressed in topic one, column E, row two, and it's R2. So in this case, we think that this one that that Stephen and I worked on is addressed by R2 on the right-hand side here. If then at that point in time, if it's already in green, please do not edit that offline. Make a comment that we can recognize. I believe I found one from David Burgess. So in column D, but if you can make that very clear that there needs to be an update to be made there before we get to the Word document, that would be great. If on the other hand, like we're now going to go in and the text in column E is still in black, you will start to see that it will have some level of red in it to indicate something needs to happen. And we're going today look at everything that is not yet green and that we're trying to get as far as possible. We are trying to avoid wordsmithing. We just want to make sure that the general intent is there. And then the wordsmithing, somebody who would like to, who has a better way of phrasing it, can pick that up. Afterwards, we'll keep track of who that is, but that we don't spend too much time wordsmithing during the call. With that, before then jumping in, I need to get something up here that I can see if there's a hand raised.
I'll check that for you, Hans. There's no hands raised.
Great. Any questions before we dive in? All right. So where we are at then is that in the first one, R3, we got as far that the we were aligned with generally the sorry, I needed to highlight it this way with the recommendation, but that we were still had some open questional clarity in rationale. And Scott and Afton, we're going to double check, particularly the second
sentence. Scott has raised his hand.
Okay. Yeah, there was a bit of a mix-up, and I do have a recommendation, so I should put it like in R in that row, but in F or G.
Yeah, put it in on here G, something like that. If you put it in there, and then we can copy it over.
Yeah, actually, I did end up editing the. Wow, too many things here. I did end up editing the. There it is. I did end up editing the recommendation itself, just because when I took all of the changes out, there were, I still had some changes in it, and it was got a little confusing, so I just pasted it in. Well, I did. Now I don't see it. Do you see it?
Let's find out. There.
Okay.
Move on, and if you can highlight the changes that you made, so that we can hone in on the differences to reread.
Okay.
And then what we can do, we can then move on to the next, and then come back once we wrap one up, and at that time you're ready as well.
Yeah, okay, let me do that.
Sounds good. So then we come back to R3, that is the rest of E2 there. And also be careful, I think if somebody needs to resize columns, please don't do that. Because at that point in time, it will not, as you can see here, show as nicely on the screen that everybody is looking at. So if you can refrain from resizing, so we have this all in one spot. Okay, back where we were. That means that we're gonna go to the next one. Here we were looking at R11. Christian, Anna, Afton, Alexis, I believe Anna could not make it, but others did join, came up with an update that is highlighted in red. So quite a few updates that were made. I will show everything here. And there was still a little bit of a follow-up by Alexis to clarify. She's not on the call today. But what I would like to do is that at least the rest we can see that everybody is okay with it, the direction, and then there is still going to be some fine tuning based on Alexis' feedback. So what it currently reads is recommend that ONC work with CMS, STILTS, and other relevant agencies to develop a value-based incentive structure using quality measures so that prescribing providers and patients can be timely and accurately informed at the point of e-prescribing care information. I think that needs a comma. Care information regarding the availability, whether a prescribed recommended medication intervention is available or may be reasonably available at the patient, at the pharmacy selected by the patient and to which the patient medication prescription has been or is being considered to be sent referred. May still need to be chopped up in multiple sentences, but that's the first one. So that's where that second comment is coming in from Alexis. And this should include data on the status of drug supplies, on the expected time of medication availability, and detailed tracking data on shipments for medications with all actors in the process, including pharmacies, ordering providers, patients, and public health emergency systems. We suggest that a cross-sectional workshop with a focus on the patient and ordering providers and pharmacy go through a use case model to further inform existing standards, the necessary capabilities and gap, including those identified in the high-tech intersection of clinical and administrative data task force report, a path toward further clinical and administrative data integration regarding transparency to patients as they apply to the pharmacy setting as well. So other than some of the adjustments that Alexis is looking at, Is there any concern at this point in time that this generally moves forward as a recommendation? And I'll scroll down that you can look at the rationale that was updated and cleaned up as well, that can go with it. And then it becomes more wordsmithing after that. But any concerns with this that we can move it forward? And we'll just work with Alexis to clean up the remaining pieces to make it flow a little bit easier.
Hans?
Yes.
One thing that came out of COVID-19 specifically was public health was assigned in many jurisdictions was providing COVID-19 vaccines to providers specific locations. Some providers wanted to reallocate vaccines across their systems, and that was challenging. So as we're looking at in this system, how do we account for distribution in that space and setting priorities for distribution?
Is that something that this recommendation can address, or is that a separate statement that there needs to be insight in reallocations? Recommend?
I guess it relates because as we're talking about availability, who's determining what's available where?
This is Shelley. I understand where you're coming from, and I think that was just a unique situation. Most medications go through a wholesaler, and
I'm not discounting that, but remember, a basic charge to the task force is coming out of the public health emergency. So I want to make sure that we've got, when those situations occur, we've got a framework that supports those kinds of activities.
Yeah, and I think that would be up to who, if it was the United States government that was supplying to providers, then it would be their responsibility to come up with a plan to reallocate because there is a chain of custody that has to occur when medications are under control of the, let's say it was sent to a physician's office. Was it refrigerated appropriately? Was it kept appropriately? Right. So that reallocation has to be up to a policy process.
Right. It might be good to call attention here just with a special, I'm not going to call it exception, but a consideration in a public health emergency that there may be different processes adopted in those situations.
But is that necessary for the recommendation here, or is that in light of what we are recommending, that as that is being fleshed out, that would come up by having references to public health emergency systems here, and perhaps in this area add public health in this statement as well, because the supplies are distributed somewhere between providers, pharmacies, and public health.
Right.
I think it's a separate recommendation, Hans, because it doesn't fall within the normal process. And reallocation is sort of like returns and reallocation of unused product with a chain of custody. It's an entirely different process. And
right, but it fits in here, because if you're looking at availability, it kind of fits into this model or this component as well. So it may be different, but it is certainly related. And as a factor here as well.
I think we'll confuse this one, because this one was more in focus with engaging the patient. And I understand that that's still a portion of engaging the patient, but I think public health emergency should be a separate recommendation on.
Can we, Shelley, would it be possible for you and Ike to work through and see how it can be phrased as a separate recommendation with additional information here that we might be able to say, so what we have here as it is okay to move forward. We may either find something in addition based on Ike's comment or in a separate recommendation to address it in that way. Is that a reasonable way to move forward?
Yeah, I'd like to call on Afton and Christian, who are part of the subgroup that worked on this. What are your thoughts on this, Afton and Christian?
Yeah, thanks, Shelley. I do think it's probably a second recommendation, just from the rationale that we kind of built out last week. It doesn't quite fit under it, but happy to tease it out a little bit more if that would be helpful.
Yes, absolutely. I think we're going to lose, what I'm saying is, Hans, I think we're going to lose the intent on R11. Mm-hmm. If we sort of try to fit this into this recommendation, because it is different intent on the recommendation in related to public health emergencies.
So if for now, then we state is that we are, and to confirm that we are okay with what is stated here, and that Ike, Shelley, Afton, perhaps Christian as well, Alexis and Anna, but to work on a second one to address that the reallocation part and how that can be stated from an ONC perspective.
Yes.
Would that work for you as well?
Ike,
you okay with that?
Yes. Sorry, I was muted.
Okay, no worries. So with that, certainly then, unless anybody has a concern as I go about this, I will turn this into that we are okay with that. I'm not going to turn it quite green yet, but then we can at least say that we are okay with what we have updated so far. I'll do the rest later to get the strikeouts out there, out of it. Anybody else before we move on? Okay.
Just one minor thing, and this is, I seem to focus on this bit perhaps too much, but we noticed that midway through that paragraph, we suggest the players, all the actors in the process. We don't note pharmacists, we note pharmacies.
Any concern?
The reason we noted pharmacies is because when we were talking about inventory control, we really felt it was the pharmacy that has control over the inventory.
But still, it would
be pharmacist who is the authority in that pharmacy, it's not the pharmacy that has that authority. It's always a pharmacist. A pharmacy can't do this on its own.
Right. I understand that. And I thought we had this discussion last time about looking at the difference between naming pharmacists and pharmacy. And what the different functions were between the two.
But one could argue that in the context is that the pharmacist would like to know about this as much as the pharmacy, if you will, because they interact with the providers and the patients. So if we say all actors need to be in, then the pharmacy from a logistics perspective has information to offer, just as the pharmacy moving drugs, but the pharmacist needs to know, the provider needs to know, ordering and the patients. So it seems like we could add pharmacists to this to make sure that all perspectives are in play.
I'd agree with that, Hans.
Yeah, Shelley, this is Christian, and I'd say that's probably a good addition to. You asked me earlier, and I didn't have a chance to step in around this overall conversation. It is nuanced, as we've mentioned on previous calls, and it's a very challenging situation, which I think is why we've come up with this compromise around. We're going to really have to have a working group to tease out this stuff, because it's not just ping a pharmacy from an automated standpoint. System responds in stock, out of stock. Script goes flying all over the country in different directions because somebody responds yes in stock. The pharmacist really is probably making an informed judgment on that response in a lot of these cases. It may not be in stock at the moment, the ping, but a response that would be flexible enough to say, but would be here in time before patient runs out, and these other scenarios that may work in the communication stream. You're going to need some human intervention there, I think, at least in the near term. So I think having the human aspect of involved actors is important here. I also call out that Kathy Graf called out a typo or an omission on the rationale line where we say drug distributor and sometimes manufacturer. And I think that was meant to include pharmacy as well.
Where did you see that? I'm sorry, I'm
talking. That line, Your Honor, the rationale line, that first sentence that goes across, currently there's no way to tell a prescribing provider or the patient if a drug distributor and sometimes manufacturer, that should say a pharmacy, drug distributor, and sometimes a manufacturer has any drugs in supply.
So pharmacy, drug distributor, like this.
Basically capturing anybody in the distribution.
When Anna had first brought it up, she had mentioned like if the manufacturer distributor doesn't have it in stock, and we kind of expanded the rationale to include all kinds of situations. And we missed it.
All right. Got, we fix it. So it's there. Is this then at this point in time waiting for Alexis with a couple of additional tweaks here? And then we go from there. I just need to keep this red that, to make sure that Alexis stays in the loop there. And then we are looking at a likely second additional recommendation. We'll find out the name of it later.
And I think you might want to put red in that sentence that we need to fix. It looks a little run on.
That's the one here that has.
Oh, okay, good.
Need to break up into more sentences as it's too long. Okay, and then it can go green right after that. We'll go in and then we can do further wordsmithing. Okay. Next is R12. This has a couple of updates that from last week that we need to make sure that we copied it over, had the right one, and we believe that this now represents what David was suggesting. Recommend that ONC require full interoperability between EHRs and PBMs and other TPAs that ensure that information about drug, device, medical supplies, and services coverage terms of an insurer are immediately available to patients, practitioners, and appropriate personnel affected by that change, including providing full awareness of the therapeutic and cost impact of that formulary change, beginning at the start of any open enrollment period through the end of the patient's coverage. So the question is that with these updates that were suggested initially, based on what is struck through here, it was considered that would be out of scope because it's looking at intent to change. Here it's now stating that when it has changed, everybody needs to be made aware and we need to have the ability to inform everybody effectively. So with that, are we comfortable that this is now in scope? And that we are comfortable that this is phrased sufficiently clear that we only need to look at wordsmithing after this.
Hey Hans, can you get rid of the column, the blue column?
The ones on the left.
Yeah, or scroll, move your screen, the bottom bar over, so we're seeing. It's still.
Hold on. Let me. I'm trying to shrink somewhere. Somebody, let me try this. Is this helping? Now I need to. Let me close that. Go back. Maybe that's the reason why. Is that now I can shrink this? Can you see more of that?
Yeah, we could see it. It's just not. It's still small. That's better. Yeah, there you go. That's. Yeah,
is this fine? Okay.
Yeah, that's good.
Okay. So we were at R12. Can we turn that green? And then look at the rationale as well and see if there's anything that may need to be tweaked, but that's easier to tweak later to make sure the rationale is complete and otherwise. But the recommendation, are we okay?
Yeah, Hans, this is Pooja. I just have one small wording change. I wonder as opposed to... Now I lost it. Are immediately available, should we say, are available in real time, since that's kind of the term that, we use. I don't know. It may be immediately available is fine, but.
David, okay with that?
In real time? I'm fine with the change. Yeah.
Okay. Other comments before we? Okay. If not, then that sounds like that I can turn this green after removing this. And then we look at everything else here that can come along, and that becomes then wordsmithing. Great, first green of the day. Like it. If I selected the correct green, we'll see. Yep, I got
lucky. You can get rid of David at the top.
Yep. Thank you. And so we got that. That means is that we have one more done.
Shelly, you didn't mean that literally, did you?
Oh, no, not at all, David. I apologize.
Okay. By the way, I picked this one up already in the Word doc, so that is done. And I believe that we have 14. That was a small addition there that was fixed. So that's done. That means is that we're on to the next one. We had R6, a recommendation that generally we were in the right direction, but there were a couple of additions that Christian was going to look at some measures. And I'm not sure, Christian, whether you had a chance to do that or whether we need to leave this here and we'll come back to this next week.
Well, I can appreciate some extra time there, but the general thought here was whether or not we needed to think about focused on different types of measures that are appropriate to, that are more descriptive of pharmacy quality outside the dispensing of a product, which are current ones. And I'm probably gonna need some input from others on viability there. So I can suggest some different approaches, but some of those may end up being more proprietary and some of those might be more general. But the idea being that the concept here are there better measures to be looking at from the standpoint of pharmacies and their relationship to public health,
okay,
and the outcome measures they're trying to address. So
what we can do is that if you provide some suggestions and can put them in here, then others can look at it as well. Next week we can round that out then.
Okay, thanks.
Yep, great. That concludes this particular cell. The next one was empty because we didn't have anyone, which gets us to R15. R15 states recommend that ONC recognize interactions between pharmacists and other providers as a critical, let me open it up so then I can remove this word as duplicate, as a critical component of trusted exchange frameworks, treatment exchange purpose, and address the barriers and encourage education for pharmacies and pharmacists to join the TEF as it's operationalized. This should address both the ability for pharmacists to query other providers, as well as other providers querying pharmacies for patient data. Any thoughts, or are we okay with that? And then the rationale, if you have any immediate ones, you can drop it in. Are we okay with this? I'm not seeing hands raised, going once, going twice, while I'm taking the strike out. Okay, then this is gonna go green. Next one is that, let me make that green and off we go. Next one is that recommend that ONC recognizes the pharmacists, and maybe we want to say rather than the dash, gets confusing, with public health interactions and reporting as a critical component of TEF's public and we missed the word health, public health exchange purpose, and address the barriers to consistent standardized data elements and formats across the public health community, including CDC and STILTS, considering reporting frameworks such as APL's case reporting approach. This not only applies to pharmacy interoperability, but all reporting to public health by all providers. Thoughts? Any further tweaks, major ones before we do the minor tweaks? Not seeing any hands raised? Something else just switched. Not hearing anybody else, then this goes green. Next, we have recommendation 17. Recommend that ONC collaborates with the pharmacies and other providers including their HIT suppliers, to establish appropriate reporting mechanisms directly from the pharmacy to the care team members and vice versa, i.e. push messaging rather than solely relying on respective queries for information. And Devin had a question, seems like a missing word or two. We think we did it. We did not add trigger events, vice versa, bi-directional. So actually there's still a little bit of work to be done. I missed that one. So that still needs to be done. We'll come back to that next week because that was not worked in. I totally skipped over that.
A question on that, Hans. HIT suppliers, do you mean vendors or?
Yes, it's, do you want to call them
vendors? Is that a term that's used?
What do we want to use? They're used sometimes interchangeably. Okay, with vendors.
Okay.
So we'll fix that, and then we can come back to this next week and approach that. Is there anything else that jumps out that would be missed if other than trigger events and bi-directional? Okay, next. Recommendation 18. By the way, I see a comment here that I haven't seen yet. Okay, yeah. Recommend that ONC collaborates with pharmacists, clinical data, and public health agencies, including CDC and STILTS, to identify a minimum data set within USCDI that pharmacists must be able to exchange. That pharmacists must be able to exchange with IIS registries, EHRs, and possibly other pharmacy information systems, considering the various roles that pharmacists have in the test to treat process to normal times and emergency use interventions. The scope should consider not only prescription-related data, but also any non-prescription-related data where the pharmacist provides test to treat services, such as assessments, test treatment, and or advice rendered. Any thoughts here other than that clinical data seems to be missing something because they don't quite equate to pharmacists and public health agencies.
David has his hand raised.
David.
My set-based thought process here, that sentence about the third line down where we talk about may have in the test to treat process. I'm wondering if anything after the word process is needed, because the implication is there are times that are either not normal times or emergency use and intervention times. I don't know why that phrase needs to be in there. I would remove it.
Okay, any objections? Makes sense? Okay, Colin. Thank you, David.
I think Scott put his...
Let's do that then after R18.
Okay. Yes.
Then we'll come back to that. Clinical data, that seems like that needs to be a different term to be on par with pharmacists and public health agencies. Who should that be? Providers? Other providers? Who should be part of this other than pharmacists and public health agencies? Otherwise, I might suggest to strike this.
What about providers?
Just providers?
I mean, because we're talking about entities, pharmacists, public health, which is misspelled. And then we talk about data in the middle. So I think they mean provider data.
Okay, makes sense. And remove the H there.
Is there any, just a question there, is there any possibility that meant that it was intended to be clinical data registries?
Could be, if that makes sense, we can add that. I'll put it in and see what
I like. Welcome other people's thought.
Okay.
I agree. I think that STC and some of the other intermediaries that holding the data on behalf of the providers.
Okay.
Well, the call out, this is like the call out for the IIS was specific to pharmacists. So I'm not sure what other clinical data you're expecting from public health.
Do you want to be then more specific? I can say instead of clinical data, call this specifically IIS.
I think you may want to call attention to IIS and other pieces, but from a public health perspective, I'm not sure what other data you're seeking from public health agencies in their role as public health agencies from a clinical care perspective.
David and Jim, regarding IIS versus others in the context of Ike's comments, are you okay if we focus on IIS registries here?
I guess I was thinking from the adverse drug effect monitoring and such that FAERS and such might not be covered and should be.
It seems a little specific to, would it be better to have something broader, less about the, and then have IIS be an example? Because there may be other data sets in the future that are relevant.
So
general, specific. That's the problem.
Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah, I'm not trying to be limiting. I just know the history of the recommendation came out of the focus on IIS, and I don't want to lose the tree for the forest.
And yeah, that's why I think having the general and then parenthetically calling out IIS is important. I agree with you.
You okay with it this way, Ike, that it's specifically called out because that's the topic area, but that we are not limited to them?
Yeah.
Okay. Others?
Yeah, Christian put in there HIV reporting is mandatory in some states and pharmacists are doing PrEP
testing.
So is there any other update than that would need to be made? Sorry, I don't have my chat up quite yet.
Shelley, I think that would go into public health agencies. I think it's captured there.
Okay, sounds good. Anybody else? Going once, going twice?
I just think maybe we should put in the rationale. Looking at use cases such as IIS, PrEP, test to treat, antibiotic stewardship.
I guess this is Steve again, Ike, that we should not be inventing new standards for exchange if we already have standards that meet criteria. In other words, if there already is, already are methods for exchanging data with IISs, there doesn't necessarily need to be a different standard for pharmacists.
And I would agree, and it's fair that by focusing on USCDI, we can establish what is the scope of the data and where we do have existing standards, data should be used to exchange that. Where the existing standards are not covering everything of interest, then we need to either update or find a way on how that can be encompassed as well. So I think by focusing on USCDI here, it leaves open in a way which standards are going to be used, but it's in light of all the other recommendations, it would seem that we are first going to focus on standards already available and already used for that data. Is that reasonable, or do you want to have an additional statement here to make sure that then the implementation and support of USCDI needs to take advantage of existing standards wherever possible? Ike, any particular thoughts on that, whether we should add something here or whether, given the rest of the recommendations set, that by having USCDI for pharmacists defined, if you will, and public health that we know at that point in time, the next step looking for the standards will be addressed through those other recommendations.
Let me ask you a question, Hans. So the example in IIS, they might want the lot number of the immunization or the vaccine that was given. That is not in USCDI. Is that what you're talking about?
So it might be that, let's say that is a data element of interest, interesting one, that might not be in USCDI or for in this context. So that would be either USCDI plus or USCDI element, wherever that ends up. But now it sits somewhere in the USCDI umbrella. That would mean is that unless a standard already supports that, that we then would have to look for enhancing or advancing a standard to ensure that lot number is included in our transaction to IIS. Now today, I'm pretty sure that in the transactions VXU that it's in there, but let's assume for a moment it's not, then it would have to be added. If it is already there, then USCDI was just catching up with what's already out there. But now it's clearly stated that it's of interest. Does that help or confuse for
you? I was just trying to bring that forward. I think it does. I mean,
okay.
Let's just go on and let's leave it.
Just that clarification on the standard support, just to make sure. Are you okay that we leave it like this and leave the other recommendations to address the standards to be used there? Or do you think it's critical to add something here as well? You may be on mute. So not hearing from Ike. I am a little hesitant to go and go green here without getting confirmation there. So let's move on. We'll come back, double check with Ike that he's okay with that. And that sounds like that. Let's go then to, you indicated that Scott had in up here a
R3.
Okay. Go ahead. So Scott, why don't you describe what you did? And then,
There was a few things that I did in the recommendation part that just were mainly for clarification and consistency with other things we were saying. So those edits at the top are fairly insignificant. Although the more I look through this, the more it seems like we really should have consistent. I see some phrasing occurring slightly differently in different recommendations, and it would be a tedious process, but going through and like when we say patients, caregivers, pharmacists, and other providers, we do little variations that might be good to be consistent about, but those really aren't anything. The bigger change was in the rationale, the specific concerns, and I put together what I thought was a better sentence or two, and so patients may have different concerns about sharing data with different care team providers. They may want to share some care team members to. They may want some care team members to have access to all information, like physicians, while others, nursing, pharmacists, may have limited access. And the patients must have a means to manage these consistently. It does address the statement was there, but having typed this and read it over and over, I don't know if there is another recommendation in here that talks about access considerations generally, because it seems like sort of an overarching concept that, a consistent means to permit patients to manage their information access.
If we get to R23, I think that's all about consent management. And so we may want to look there and see that this aspect of it, perspective of some more, some less, whether we can further reflect it in there. So if you go to in your own version to the bottom last row in this particular tab that is documented, have a look there and see. And then when we get to that,
we get to that, it might negate the need for that last sentence.
or just still have it here, but then elaborate in the rationale. It's helpful to understand why.
It turns out that some of the changes that I made, whoever edited R3 previously found the same edits that I ran across. Some redundancy and some spelling and stuff.
All right. With that, with these updates, does anybody object to turning this green after applying these updates? Okay, not hearing any. I think I'm going to then just try to do the following shortcut where I'm just turning it green. And I'll take care of the removal of the...
You may not want to do that.
Why not?
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah, you can just take out
the strike-throughs after that.
Strike-throughs.
Yeah, no, I'm
I made the mistake of doing that and had to redo the whole thing.
I know that feeling. Okay. All right. Let's then go back to where we were there. Thank you, Scott, for that. We were at down here at 18. And Ike, I'm not sure whether you can hear us now or whether you're still offline. We'll come back to that. Let's go to 19. Recommend that ONC work with CDC, ASPR, and STILTS in particular to identify a shared. Actually, this is getting a little bit too much on the screen to go from left to right. Let me do it this way. Then it's a little bit less sideways. Recommend that ONC work with CDC, ASPR, and STILTS in particular to identify a shared superset of key operational measures critical to situational awareness during declared emergency across different data sources such as hospitals, clinicals, pharmacies, etc. Include support for that set, which covers pharmacies as data sources as well, into the Helios Aggregate Data Initiative, if that's spelled right. And to ensure implementation guidance covers these measures. And then rationale, pharmacies play an important role, et cetera. Any concerns with this recommendation? Not hearing any or raising, not seeing any hands. Anything in the chat, Shelley?
Nope, nothing.
Green it is.
I just want to warn you, we have 2 more minutes before public comment.
Let's see whether we can squeeze in R20 and then we'll pick up with R21 after that. If there's going to be a discussion or R20, we'll stop that and go to a public comment. Recommend that ONC, in collaboration with FDA, CDC, and STILTS, further review FDA's Sentinel surveillance program on how pharmacy data sharing would be important for their surveillance during emergencies. Any comments, thoughts, any concerns? If not, then with 50 seconds to go, I'll turn that green. The next one will likely have a little bit more conversation. So I think, Mike, we are ready to turn it over to you for public comment, and then we'll continue if we have time left with R21.
Okay, great. Thanks, Hans. We're going to open up our meeting for verbal public comments. If you're on Zoom and would like to make a comment, please use the hand raise function located on the Zoom toolbar at the bottom of your screen. If you're on the phone only, press *9 to raise your hand, and once called upon, press *6 to mute and unmute your line. So let's pause just for a moment to see if any members of the public would like to raise their hand. I'm not seeing any hands raised yet, Hans, so I'll turn it back to you to finish up. Thank you.
All right, thank you. And while you might not have comments in public comments, you still are invited to make any comments in the chat. So, and I'll reshare my screen. And that should still be that one. On to 21. 21 states that recommend that ONC consider including the capturing of race and ethnicity as part of e-prescribing certification and point to USCDI version 4 that references the CDC race and ethnicity code set version 1.2, where alternative paths are not available or policies and measure require their sharing as part of e-prescribing. And then rationale, why should it go through e-prescribing? Because there are no other paths available to share. And maybe this needs to be clarified a little bit more, what alternative paths mean, by just spelling out of sharing the data with
Agree.
Any comments, additional comments, thoughts? Scott, do you have your hand up?
I'm just concerned if this becomes a requirement for, as part of e-prescribing certification. Having it within the e-prescription, I just like the idea of it eventually becoming a requirement for the pharmacies to collect, just because of the workload in many pharmacies these days. So, sorry.
Christian.
I mean, this one makes sense from a health equity focus standpoint and an SDOH standpoint, which is a emerging theme, not even emerging, it's upon us. So being able to exchange not only race and ethnicity, but some other components there are important. So I think that's going to support bi-directional work, even if it is a little burden on systems vendors to be able to exchange it. So I'm generally in support of this recommendation for that reason. Patient doesn't need to be pinged 5 times for the same question, race and ethnicity. If a validated source has credible source of a healthcare provider has collected that, which could include pharmacists. Why should we burden patients with repetitive statements? Race and ethnicity typically doesn't change over our lifespan, as I recall.
Okay.
Yeah, I think this makes sense. When I read this, we're not saying that the pharmacists have to capture it, right? It's just being able to be shared in the e-prescribing workflow, which I think is the right way to go. Because I think, as long as we're stating it that way, I think this makes a lot of sense. And I would support this.
Afton.
Yeah, I think that it was me who originally brought up the fact that we had a really hard time gathering this information in early pandemic days, and it would be great to have it. So agreed, as long as it's not mandatory to have it and collect it, being able to receive it and exchange the information would be super helpful from this standpoint. So,
David.
Two comments. One, we note the word capturing. We never note exchange. Should that be changed to either include the exchanging of race and exchanging of data regarding race and ethnicity? Or should it be capturing and exchanging? And then, go ahead.
Yeah, to clarify, is that on the on the USCDI side, I just need to double check. Somebody else might know for sure, but I believe that this information is already USCDI version 3. It might be a more current version in 4, but that would mean is that on the certified software side, it's already starting to be included and other SDOH information as well. So on the non-pharmacist provider side is where the capturing as a result needs to be enabled as well to be able to exchange or to receive it. It seems like that as we do this, as we now say that it should be part of exchange as well with e-prescribing, that at some point in time, if the pharmacist is the first one, I would agree with David there, earlier is that if the pharmacist happens to be the first one that is in connection with the patient, they might be the one that is able to capture it. Still a challenge. It's a challenge for everybody to capture it. But that would seem to be part of the, if everybody's part of the care team, if you are the first one that that is in contact, you may be the best person to capture it. You might not get it for whatever reason, but you should have the opportunity to capture it if you can.
Scott.
I might have a follow-up because I responded to a comment that he made. So David first and then back to Scott.
So my second comment was, and this addresses some, I think, of what Scott was talking about. It sounds like this should then be including the ability to capture an exchange, not actually the capturing, because that sounds much more forceful. It could even be the option to capture and change, but I think that might be a little too loose. So I'm thinking ability.
Sounds reasonable. Scott?
Yeah, I actually was going along the same lines as this discussion. My only concern right now, as far as the exchange, that is definitely part of, that works in as part of the e-prescribing certification. Capture is workflow, and I don't have a problem with that. Mandates will make it very difficult, as mandating capture is going to be a workload consideration, but capture itself, the ability to capture it, store it, and then exchange it, I think is, as long as we're of the ability, I think it's yeah, okay.
The actual capture is all, and therefore, if you could not capture it, you cannot exchange it.
Somebody has to get it. Somebody right. has to obtain it first.
But the capture is what we typically see is in the standards that it's a zero dot dot something, because yes. it acknowledges that you cannot capture it for whatever reason. Yes. But it typically means is that a source system for that has, in order to be able to exchange it, you have to be able to capture it.
And that's brought out in the rationale, although I find it a little awkwardly stated, but I can't think of a less awkward mechanism at this point.
But okay.
Thank you.
So are we then generally looking at the hands up and the discussion? Does it look like with these adjustments we have an acceptable recommendation with then the rationale to follow and further wordsmithing later? I'm not hearing any objections. So I'm going to turn this one green without removing that part. We'll remove the strike through the rest of it later, because there is still maybe an opportunity to get us to R22 with a 2 minute spare. There is 23, but that might be the introduction to next week. This one states, recommend that ONC collaborate with the pharmacy community and patients to develop guidance on best practices for data capture from patients in pharmacies. Thoughts? Scott.
I think that's a great overall thing to recommend. It's sort of nebulous, but it is nebulous in that it covers a lot of things, but you know, anything that could be done to make it simpler for patients and pharmacies to interact for all this additional information that we're looking for would be a good thing.
This is like really an amendment to include stakeholders or caregivers.
To collaborate with pharmacy community. So you would put it maybe perhaps, and then taking Scott's other comment in mind, other providers like that, Mike?
And caregivers.
Oh, and caregivers, sorry. Instead of, so sorry about that.
As just instead of exclusively patients, because you've got parents and other folks involved.
Okay.
We're at the top of the hour, Christian. I think we need to stop this discussion.
We'll keep this one not green yet, but we are close. We'll pick it up next week at R22. And we also have an Ike, if you can consider R18, whether this needs the additional thought that you have in here or whether other recommendations sufficiently cover the thought you had around R18, and then we can resolve that one as well.
Okay, so we're meeting on October 11th. And then just a reminder, if you want to attend the HITAC meeting on October 19th and November 9th, October 19th will provide an update to the HITAC, and then November 9th will finish. And sorry, Mike, we went over a minute. So thank you, everyone.
Thank you.